Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free.
Well, hello everyone, welcome back. Hope you had a wonderful week and are ready for a new topic. I have been spending a lot of time on education, and that's because I believe that education is the main driver of everything we do. It filters through everything, but the problem that happens is that most people don't realize that after the kids get this education, indoctrination, and learn to become good socialists, what does that mean for the rest of us? What are the consequences of putting these people in our bureaucracies, in our government? And what are we losing as Americans? One of the things that we have not focused on for a long time is property rights and what that actually means. People are losing their homes. They're getting arrested for things like gardening and collecting rainwater. And they're losing the rights to their land as their communities are being rezoned and private property is being eliminated in addition to single family housing. So I have decided that this is a very, very important topic and that we need a full discussion on it. And I have asked a very good friend, John Anthony, who has studied this. Well, John, I just realized we have known each other for about 11 years, and I met you at one of my seminars talking about property rights in Agenda 21, and you carried this to the next level, and I am so excited to be able to share your information with my audience. John Anthony, thank you so much for joining me today. This is Karen Schoen, and you're listening to The Prism of America's Education, and today we are focusing on property rights and what that means. John, welcome to the show.
Hi, Karen. Thanks for having me on. I'm grateful for the opportunity to share some of this information.
Oh, so important. Can you please tell everyone before we go forward where they can find you and where they can get a hold of you?
Sure. Well, you know, you can just drop me an email at john@sustainablefreedomlab.org. I figure if everything else can be sustainable, then by golly, freedom ought to be sustainable also. So john@sustainablefreedomlab.org. And you can always call me. I'm open to phone calls, 908-347-7097. My goal is to help people understand what's going on today.
Now, isn't that refreshing, folks, to not have to go to Facebook and Twitter to find somebody? You actually can make a phone call and have a real conversation. Wow, isn't that terrific? That's what we need to be doing more in America instead of this nonsense with Facebook where you get bombarded by thousands of people that you don't even know.
It's true. And, you know, it's interesting you talk about the prism of education and all the wonderful things you're doing. I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but this affirmatively furthering fair housing rule, which I'll talk a little bit about, which is all part of compromising property rights, ties right into education. They actually are married. I'm going to show you how those two come together. And they literally create a highway so that the federal government can just kind of drive down that highway and shovel all this social, emotional, intellectual learning into the brain. We're just opening that brain up for them to be able to access. So let me go back to this AFFH. As I traveled around the country for many years talking about property rights, one of the things I discovered was many people didn't really understand what property rights were. They figured, well, I own my house, right? So I have the lock and the key. I go in, I keep anybody out that I don't want in there. And so I own my house. But it doesn't actually work this way. I think it was Justice Saunders out in Washington State said that if you give up even one portion of those property rights, then you've essentially annihilated all of the rights that you have to the property. And I'll give you an example of how that works. And you'll we'll begin to see the the importance of understanding what AFFH is and all the property rights. So imagine you bought a brand new car and you saved your money and you came up with whatever it was, you know, $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 or more, and you got this beautiful new car. You have a certificate of ownership and this is yours. You know, you worked hard for it. So now you've got this and it belongs to you. But on the way out the door, the salesman reminds you, oh, you know what? The Biden administration just passed this new regulation. And because we're concerned about CO2, we don't want you traveling too far. So we're just going to put a limiter on your car and you can't drive more than 25 miles a day. But that's not really a problem because on the weekends you can drive 250 miles. So we're going to kind of compensate there for you. So it's your car, you own it. But you can only use it at a certain mileage and certain times of the day. And I'm sure you understand what that's all about. Now, that's not as far-fetched as you might think, because there is a capability of putting limiters on cars. This has been discussed in the past. They've also talked about mileage, charging by the mileage that you drive the car. So this isn't such a far-fetched idea that I just said. But look what I've managed to do. If the government can decide how far you can drive your car, and when you can use your car, who owns the car? Do you own it? Or does the government own it and you just lease it from them? Beyond that, there's something else that you've lost. It's not just the ownership of the car that you lost, because the government now can control your behavior. If you want to visit your children, who let's say live, you know, 40 miles away, but you can only drive 25 miles in a day, both ways, then you're going to have to wait till Sunday or Saturday or whatever day they decide to give you so that you can visit your kids. So all of a sudden, the government is now able to control not just the car that you thought you owned. They also have used that as a doorway to get into your behavior, and they can get to manage that too. That's why property rights are so important. If you don't own property, then you become the property. So I think we've all heard that quote in the past. We don't want to become property, so we have to take charge of this. Well, AFFH was an interesting addition to the Civil Rights Act of 1964 and the Act of 1968, the Fair Housing Act. What happened is over the years, many communities, and very likely yours too, took different grants. Sometimes they were community development block grants. Sometimes they were other forms of grants that they took in, that they came from HUD. And usually you got to spend that money more or less the way you wanted to. Well, the government under President Obama decided that one of the problems with communities and the reason that we're not getting rid of this disparate relationships between minority groups and the white privilege groups, the reason that's not shrinking the gap in between the two is because we don't have enough control over that money. So we need to find a way to control the money that we give to these local communities. And all of a sudden in 2007, this is before Barack Obama passed some of these regulations on AFFH, a guy named Craig Gurian came along. And he made a living, believe it or not, he had this small little nonprofit organization in New York City that consisted of himself and his wife. He would go around suing communities. And he sued them because he said, when you took the grant money, there was a statement in there you signed that said, I will affirmatively further fair housing. So he'd sue them under the False Claims Act and say, well, you're not affirmatively furthering fair housing. You're not doing what you could be doing. So I'm going to sue you. And those lawsuits paid off. If you accepted $1,000 in grant money, let's say, and you were sued and lost under the False Claims Act, then your community lost $3,000. It's a triple payout. So Craig Gurian was kind of like, and he gets a piece of that, by the way. He gets a little bit of that. He went after a little community in upstate New York called, or just outside of New York City, called Westchester County. And when he went after Westchester County, they had taken over $50 million, not $1,000, $50 million from HUD. And Craig said, you know what? You're not really doing everything you can do to affirmatively further fair housing. Just for a point of reference, that term, affirmatively furthering fair housing, that's been in the documents under HUD since 1968. So this is nothing new, but what was new was what happened to it later after Craig got done with his job on Westchester County. He went into Westchester County, he sued them, dragged on for years in court. And finally in 2008, the courts decided Westchester County had not affirmatively furthered fair housing. and they were forced to pay back $52 million plus build a whole bunch of housing. Well, not only that, it was a good payday for Craig, because Craig walked out of this with $7.5 million tax-free dollars in his pocket. So not bad for a couple of years of work he put in on it. But meanwhile, the head of HUD was sitting back there in Washington, D.C. and saying, this guy named Ron Sims at the time, he said, wow, this is like manna. This is a gift from heaven. We probably didn't believe in manna, but this is a gift. So we've got a way now that we can force communities to do what we tell them to. All we have to do is tighten up these restrictions, and we'll call them affirmatively furthering fair housing. And that's when a new rule came out. And that rule came out actually, I think it was September of 2015, by the time they got all the pieces together. This now enabled the AFFH rule sat on top of the grant that you got. So if you got that community development block grant, then AFFH sat on top of it and set a whole, created a whole new set of regulations that you had to follow. Well, they just didn't stop with there. Obama came along and he said, well, wow, now we can control what they do with the community. Let's not just look at equity. Let's also look at the economy. What happens if we can't, the lower income families can't get into that luxury home? What if they can't get into those better schools? What if they can't shop at those better department stores? What can we do about that? So we created a program called Strong Together. And what Strong Together did was it tied together property rights through HUD's marginalization formulas. So we have property rights over here. We've also got transportation, because we have to get those kids from the poor schools where they are, the lower the poor quality schools, into the better quality schools. So we're going to have to like get buses to transport them over there. And then we're also going to have to take a look at education, because if we have an economic breakdown and we got a classroom full of all guys that are rich and we got all poor guys over here, well, that's not right. We have to intermix these classes together. So we set up these regional centers. So this thing was like rocking and rolling around 2015, all under the aegis of affirmatively furthering fair housing.
John, do you think that this transportation bill incorporates all of that? Because from what I'm hearing, from what you're saying, the tentacles are just reaching into every single thing that we're doing in order to make it, quote, fair between the races, which has nothing to do with the person's ability, occupation, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
From what you're describing, it looks like they just took affirmatively furthering fair housing and created a transportation bill that incorporates everything they're doing.
And an infrastructure bill and an education bill. And it's all, it all one impinges upon the other. Each one works together. So in effect, what we've done is we've created this avenue. So through HUD, we took a marginalized portion of the population, or minority groups or concentrated areas of poverty. So we took those groups over here and we said, well, we need to do something about that. Well, part of what we need to do about that is we need to improve their education. So suddenly what was property rights now just became education. Then we look at transportation. He said, well, they got to be able to get the students from point A to point B. That means we now have transportation in there. So now we've got HUD, transportation, and we've got the Department of Transportation and the Department of Education. So we now got these three departments all working together. And they actually did. They're having group meetings together just to decide, well, how are we going to go forward? But if you look at this, the center of all of this, where all this aims, is at the child in class. So we've essentially, as I mentioned earlier, we've created this super highway into your child's brain where we just feed them full of whatever we want. Does critical race theory sound familiar? All of this now just gets funneled right into your child. So unless parents are aware of the relationship between property rights, transportation, and education, and see how these all meld together, we just think we got all these different programs going in here, and isn't so wonderful, or maybe we can make, you know, little changes in one or the other.
Now, I don't want people to think that property rights is just your single family home. Property rights encompasses everything, doesn't it?
Property rights is intellectual property rights. Property rights are your thoughts. It's not just your property. It's the car. It's not just physical things. It's the ideas that you have, that you create for yourself. Property rights literally is virtually anything that you have or own or control through your physical being or through your thoughts. those become your property. If I come up with an idea for the telephone, then that idea is my property. If somebody can come along and compromise that property, so they say, well, that really wasn't John's idea, that was the government's idea, then all of a sudden I have to surrender that, give that up. This is why Ayn Rand, I think it was Ayn Rand that said that, you either own property or you become property. I apologize if I misattributed that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
We either control the property or we become the property of the person who does control that.
Now, let's also remember these people that are doing this were never elected. That's very important to understand that this information comes from think tanks, from bureaucracies, from government programs, and it creates this overlay of people who were never elected, who now make rules and regulations that we, the people, have to follow in order to get our own money to improve our own communities.
Yeah, I think that's so important. These are unelected bureaucrats. In many cases, they have far more power than even Congress does. Now that might sound like, well, that's crazy. Well, no, I'm going to round out my numbers because they're not exactly, I haven't looked at them recently. But on average, Congress writes around 400 bills each year, whereas regulatory agencies do over 4,000 to 5,000 regulatory renderings. They have exactly the same power as legislation does. It's just like a law. You can go to jail, you can be fined, you can be punished for it. Where is the real power? And in many ways, Congress gave up their power because they'll write a generalized piece of legislation like the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, let's say, under the Dodd-Frank Act. So they'll create this and they'll generate this 1,500-page bill. Then they'll hand it over to the federal agencies and they'll say, well, okay, go ahead and implement this, make it work. And they'll write 40,000 pages on top of the 1,500 pages, or maybe not. Maybe 4,000 or 5,000, excuse me. So they'll create all these additional laws. And we're stuck abiding by these laws that half the time we don't even know what they are. They were written by people that really aren't paying attention. I had an interesting situation, don't remember, maybe 2018 was it? I'm not sure of the year. I was talking about some of the effects that HUD's regulatory practices are having on local communities, zoning laws, and property rights. And in the audience was members of HUD and Department of Transportation. And after I gave my talk, they quietly told me, we had no idea what was going on. We didn't know that this was what was happening. And I think that's true for the people that I was speaking to. I think there's some other people who know very well what's happening and they're perfectly okay with it. But the incompetence at these levels is staggering. So yes, you're right. These are unelected officials that are doing all of it. Everything that I just described was rolling along beautifully until one thing happened that nobody ever thought was going to happen. And that happened in November 2016. And that's when Donald Trump won the presidency and Hillary Clinton did not, because the Strong Together and these other programs that the Obama administration had begun under the aegis of the Civil Rights Act of 64 and 68, that was all just supposed to continue right on through into the classroom in exactly the way you just described. But instead, it stopped and nobody was prepared for that. Because they had such a massive investment in this, the left and the Obama administration, that's why they went after Trump. One of the reasons why they went after Trump tooth and nail. The other was to stay out of jail.
Unfortunately, as we know, this is always all about the money. They don't care about you. They don't care about your children. And John, you just said something really important. The incompetence is staggering. Well, if you have a group of people who have been uneducated, who cannot read and write, who graduate school with a competency level of 30 to 40% of reading ability, that means they're reading on a third grade level. And where are they now? They are in our government. So what do we think that these incompetent people are going to do in the government? Do we all of a sudden think a light bulb is going to go on and they're going to wake up one day and become competent? That doesn't work that way. They have been ingrained to believe this. And I believe one of the heads of the Reset Division, his name went right out of my head, but I will find it, said that in the future, you will own nothing and you will be happy. And this is what they're driving at, isn't it, John?
Your last four words said it all. you will be happy. You will own nothing and you will be happy. If you look at, was it Blackstone out there? How much money did they, was it $6.8 billion that they just spent buying up homes and converting them into rentals? And they're not just buying any old home. Some cases they're buying million-dollar homes, breaking them down and converting them into rentals. In one case, they went into Texas and bought up literally an entire community. Well, why would they do something like that? Because they're converting them into rent. Well, if all I do is rent, if all I do is give up my zoning, my community zoning, by having the federal government take over through regulatory actions like affirmatively furthering fair housing, and they change the zoning regulations so now we can only have, you know, apartment buildings put in there. How can I accumulate anything? Isn't property, I'm talking about real property now, isn't real property the way most people tend to accumulate money and wealth? It's either the stock market or real estate. Well, you can't do it if you can't own any real estate. What they're doing is shrinking the ambitions of the American people. Instead of kids graduating from college and saying, wow, I want to set the world on fire. I want to start my own company. I want to be part of this great capitalist system and go from where I am now to where I can possibly be in the future. Instead of saying that, it's, I guess I have white privilege, so I better, you know, I better be aware of the fact that my minority brothers and sisters out there aren't doing as well. So maybe I better allow for that and accommodate their needs. We all want to rise together. We want our brothers and sisters, no matter what color they are, to become successful too. That's not part of the equation. And you hit on something else. Not only will they have nothing and be happy with nothing, they'll have little or no ambition and be happy with that. I don't know if you remember, it was just, and I can't remember the time it was said, but Barack Obama made this statement. What we really want is for people to have time to just appreciate nature, you know, sit in the backyard, do some drawing, do some painting, appreciate nature. Now, that all sounds well and good. But what he had in mind was, in place of ambition, we want to do that. Now, if you want to be an artist or a painter or a guitar player or whatever, that, you know, that's all well and good. If your total ambition is just to sit back and chill, you forget all about the drive that it takes to become successful, the hard work, the failure that goes into becoming success. If we don't learn how to deal with those things, then how are we prepared to move into the future? So I want to pick up on a thread I dropped a minute ago, and that was about when Trump took over. When Trump took over the presidency, he began to staff these agencies up with people that he thought were good people. I think he did the best that he could at the time. I don't think he had any idea of how corrupt these federal agencies were and how corrupted or corruptible the people inside them were, both corrupted and corruptible. Because often I'm asked the question, AFFH was lethal. It was toxic. It took rights away from people. And it was expansive because it got right into our children's minds, you know, through the transportation and through the disparate education. If it was able to do all that, why didn't we just get rid of it? And there's an interesting story there. Most of these are regulatory actions, which means the only way you can really get rid of them is to go to Congress and pass new laws and stop them. And he had Congress for 2 years. He had the House, he had the Senate for 2 years. He could have stopped them. And guess what? They had no stomach for it.
And they also had Ryan, who was an anti-Trumper, who believed that everything that Trump wanted to do was against his globalist agenda, which is really where all of this is coming from. The idea is to eliminate America and force Americans to be like the rest of the planet, which is to rent, not own. They don't want Americans to be different, because I remember Obama saying to a group in Kenya, if you think that you're going to have air conditioning and automobiles like the United States, basically he said, think again, that's not going to happen. And why? Because America would be an example for the rest of the world to emulate, and they don't want the rest of the world to own anything. They want it for themselves. And we can see that happening over and over and over again. John, I wanted to ask you about equity, because what you're describing is not equality. This is what equity means, when everybody gets the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah. we think equitable and equity are the same thing, and they're not in the minds of the left. They're nothing like that at all. It reminds me of a trip I took. I was down in the one of the islands in the Caribbean. We're driving along. It was a bus tour. We're kind of driving along. We were noticing down by the water, you had all these kind of lower middle income houses down there. Some were bordered on shacks, but they were just kind of struggling to get by. Everybody was like that. No matter where you went on the island, they were all living exactly the same. But if you look to the left up on the hill, there were these mansions. And so we had stopped somewhere and I asked, you know, one of the women I met there, I said, who lives up there in all those mansions? Because as far as the eye could see, you have these beautiful, beautiful multi-million dollar homes up there. And he said, oh, that's easy. That's all the politicians. That's the politicians. He said, yeah, they have all the money. We have what's left. That is what equity is.
Exactly. It's doling out pieces of poverty so that everybody is the same in their own poorness. And that's really what happens with equity, because there's no thought process in there. If you're not owning anything, you don't have a vested interest in anything. You're not going to get a reward from that ownership, which is how most businesses have been started. How many people started a business in their garage, in their basement of a house that they or their family owned? And they used that ownership to be able to create some of the most incredible things that we have, like Microsoft. That was created in the basement of his family home. Would we be able to do that today? I don't think so, with all the regulations that are thrown upon us. Who knows even what we would be allowed to do? But that's the idea of loss of equity. There won't be any creation. There won't be any innovation. There won't be anything happening new, because everything must be the same. That's the goal of socialism. Everything must be the same.
Yeah, and we've got this idealized version that's been fed to children in school over the years, and gradually just keeps getting more and more. In reality, it's a sameness. That's all. Equity to the left is just a sameness. And it's not like they're going to take the middle class and raise them up. You know, I was reading an economics study one time, and the largest mobility in America is upward mobility from the poor class to the middle class. So when we say, but look at all the poor we have in America, and we still have whatever the percentage is at this point, I know it dropped under Trump, by the way, the percentage of poor, let's say it's 12% or whatever it might be. It's not the same 12%. The people who were poor 5 years ago now have moved into the middle class, and the people in the middle class are moving on up into the wealthier classes. And part of the reason they're able to do that is because the value of their property, the real property, begins to increase. At the same time, their intellectual property increases. They get smarter. They start businesses. We're not a stagnant society, but if you were to leave it to the left or the progressives of the world, we would become a stagnant society. You would be locked into the job that you're most suited for. When you go to college, you'll say, well, these are the only real openings we have for training, because these are the jobs that are needed out there in the marketplace. So this is what you're going to learn how to do. You're going to put rivets in an airplane, or whatever the job may be.
I remember when I first started doing this, I got an email from someone in Belgium, and she said, she was reading my website, and she said, I cannot agree with you more with what's happening. All my life, I wanted to be a mathematician, but my government told me I had to be an engineer. I hate my job. I wanted to be a mathematician. I don't want to be an engineer. Don't let America fall into the same trap. And that's where we're headed. But don't touch that dial. Don't go away. We will be right back. You're listening to Karen Schoen. This is the Prism of America's Education. And my guest, John Anthony, who can be found at sustainablefreedomlab.org. We'll be right back.
Because of COVID-19, the average American worries about their immune health 4 times a day. That's 112 times per year. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains 15 full doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day pill-free gel pack. It tastes great, is convenient on the go, and it's more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
AmericaOutLoud.com is the alternative from the agenda-driven globalist. Here, we take on the challenges of our generation so that we can preserve future generations. On-demand podcast or real-time talk radio with our streaming apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. America Out Loud Talk Radio. Liberty and justice for all.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Karen Schoen. You're listening to The Prism of America's Education with my very special guest, John Anthony, from the SustainableFreedomLab.org. John, I know that during the break we had a chance to talk, and I was reminded from some of the quotes from some of what the people had said that were putting this agenda in place. And why am I using the word agenda? Because, folks, the root of all of this is Agenda 21. I know you've heard that over and over again. Agenda 21 has morphed into Agenda 2030, into the Great Reset, into the Green New Deal. It's all the same, isn't it, John? It's all the same. Nothing changes.
Nothing has changed. It's like the AFFH we're talking about. It's consistent. It moves right on through. When the Earth Summit took place, in 1992, the Earth Summit took place. We talked about what would the world look like? What, in order to have this globalist dream, this globalist Marxist, which slides into totalitarianism dream, what would it look like? Well, Maurice Strong, one of the leaders of that, said, we don't think that air conditioning is sustainable. Everything had to be sustainable. We don't think that certain size farms are sustainable. We don't think that meat is sustainable. So if you think you're going to have a nice air conditioned, go out to a nice air conditioned restaurant and have a nice steak for dinner, the day will come when you can't get that. And we begin to see movements away from beef and meat right now. We begin to see the evils of running your air conditioning all the time and how that's not fair to the rest of the community because you're taking too much power away from the grid. So we're slowly moving into these things right now. With the alternate fuels that we have, with solar panels, wind turbines, most of these are not capable of consistently sustaining the energy that's necessary for us to live the lifestyle that we've been accustomed to. So what do you think is going to happen? Do you think they're going to say, well, we don't need those biodegradable fuels anymore? We don't need to have windmills any longer? Or do you think they're going to say you can change your lifestyle?
Well, definitely you can change your lifestyle. And you just prompted me to remember something. Do you remember 10 years ago when we were screaming about smart meters and smart appliances that interacted with those smart meters? Yeah. Well, right now, folks, look what's going on with those rolling blackouts. And look what happened in Texas this past year during a storm when their wind turbines did not work. And what did we hear from Texas? They don't have enough electricity. So what are they going to be experiencing this year? They may have to experience rolling blackouts. We are more ahead than we care to realize. I believe that we are. What do you think, John?
Yeah, we definitely are. We're going after not only the standard of living of America. We've always had the highest standard of living, had the most economic freedom. I didn't see the latest freedom report that just came out, but I was told by reliable sources that we're not even near number one anymore. We got countries that we used to laugh at are now have more economic freedom than we do in the United States. And yet, if you talk to business people on LinkedIn, which I have, they'll tell you, hey, we're doing just fine. We got freedom. And the reason they're doing just fine is because this is the guy that's going out and he's working hard and he's making a lot of money, but he's turning a blind eye to everything that's going on around him. Part of what I wanted to impart today, we can't do that. We've all got to be aware of what's going on because we have the greatest country on earth, but we are going to lose it if we allow people to come into our lives and divide us the way we have done. When I talked about Craig Gurian and how he sued these communities, the way that was done was they would literally pit one community against another community member and say, hey, you know, I can make some money by finding out that they falsely said they're affirmatively furthering fair housing when they're not. I can make a few bucks off this. I mean, Craig made $7 million for himself, and other people in other communities have done the same thing. But the model here is we pit one group of people against another group of people. Critical race theory does exactly the same thing. It pits a group of people against another. You've got the oppressor, and then you've got the oppressed. But it does something that's even worse. And this, Karen, I hope is right in line with the things that you're thinking. Children, which we all say are our most important asset, are in these formative years. I used to be an elementary school teacher. I taught primary and secondary grades. They're bringing critical race theory into primary grades all the way up through college and then even into the military. So it's becoming a cultural way of life is what we're doing. What happens when we bring the precepts of critical race theory to a child who's just finding out who she is or who he is? The basics behind critical race theory are everybody essentially is racist. We continue that racism because if we're middle class, we're doing it without even thinking about it. If we're the upper elite class, we're doing it intentionally. But the white people are doing this because we have white privilege, and especially the males because we have male privilege. And then the third component of it is that this just continues ad infinitum unless something is done to stop it. We're teaching children in school at a time when they're trying to have a sense of self, a sense of who am I in this world? What can I become? We're teaching them that they're bad people, that they're oppressors. And if they're not oppressors, then they're weak people and they're the oppressed. Talk to a psychologist, especially a child psychologist. What does that kind of a message send to a young boy or a young girl? It creates self-doubt. It creates anxiety inside. They begin to question themselves. That can lead to withdrawal, depression, and ultimately down the road can even lead to suicide, which, by the way, if I'm not mistaken, suicides are on the rise throughout the United States.
Yes, they are. And you are 100% right. That is that part that you just said is our future. And what we are doing is we are eliminating the intellectual side of a child, and we are working and exposing everything that they do through a social emotional lens. Now, what happens when that happens? Because intellectually they're void. Well, a person has to fill 24 hours a day. Yes, some of it is sleeping, but what are they going to do if they are void of any intellectual thought? What do? They turn to drugs, they turn to sex, they turn to, sadly, suicide. And that's why they turn to crime, because human nature inherently wants to succeed and be different. I want to be the best that I can be. I want to show everybody. I want to create. I want to innovate. But if you're blocked from doing that, and you're being blocked without even knowledge of it, because you're never even being taught that, yes, you can do those things, then you're going to turn to things that are readily available, which, of course, today are drugs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Critical race theory is taught, especially in the younger grade, in the lower grades, through storytelling. Now, you know, I think you have a teaching background, don't you, Karen?
Yes, I was a teacher for 20 plus years.
There you go. You know how powerful stories are. Stories leave an impression. Now, hold on to that thought for a minute. Now, how many people do we have in society today who had an experience when they were young? Maybe they were 3 years old, 5 years old, 7 years old, but that was traumatic for them. And that stuck with them. And now they're 50 and 60 years old and they're still struggling with that. Are they going in and out of therapy because that's given them a problem? This isn't even unusual in society. These things happen. Imagine if we took a philosophy that teaches you that you are an oppressor, that your whole history, even if you haven't oppressed, your past has oppressed, and therefore you've inherited that and it's structurally part of who you are. My God, you want to traumatize a child? That's what we're doing. We're creating traumas that are going to create major problems for children down the road. That's, in my opinion, the number one reason why we have, there's a lot of reasons to get rid of critical race theory, but that's the number one reason to get rid of it. We're destroying children with it.
And what happens when those children grow up? That's what I keep on saying too. Yes. Life continues after the 12th grade. life goes on. And if you are graduating a child that can't read, write, and do simple math, and you're sending them out into a competitive world, what do you think is going to happen to this child? They're going to go into that fetal position. They're going to take in every kind of emotional problem that is available and work on that as their life. And then they will be herded, directed, and corralled into doing things that they would have never done if they actually knew the consequences of their actions. They have no idea. They have no clue.
We want our children to be able to think, to critically think. There's an interesting article written by Daniel Willingham of the University of Virginia back in 2007, and it was about critical thinking. And it's worth looking up, Daniel Willingham, University of Virginia. Critical thinking is a complex series of steps, but even children can do it. For instance, if your 10-year-old daughter was going to go fishing with you one day, she could probably figure out, well, I'm going to need waders because I might get wet. It might rain when we're out there. So maybe I should take a raincoat with me. I'm going to need some bait and I'm going to need my fishing pole and so forth. So this is critical thinking. You're allowing for what might happen and then you compensate for it before it does happen. So we're able to critically think. But Willingham makes a big point. One of the fundamental necessities of critical thinking is what he calls domain knowledge. In other words, you have to know what's going on. You have to have a scope of what's happening. When information is censored to adults and children, they have no access to domain knowledge. Therefore, it's impossible for them to critically think. Does that make sense? If I only show you one side of an argument, then you don't have the knowledge it takes to say, well, you know what, masks really don't work, or hydroxychloroquine really is a good thing, or I'm not sure lockdowns don't create more harm than good. You have no ability to do that. You, in essence, you create a helpless society. So what we've got here is you got HUD with all of their prejudices coming into a system that supposedly they're trying to help overcome disparities. You've got the transportation faction coming in through HUD. We've got our educational system that's now responding to the needs of what HUD says they have to have in the transportation system and the federal government says. We got Common Core that tells what college and career ready is going to look like. And now we've got this open bowl of a mind. The teachers call this an open bowl when your mind is absorbing new information. We now have this open bowl. And what are we shoving into it? Racism. We're teaching kids that America is racist, but the only way we can have less racism is for you to admit that you are a racist.
The only way to have less racism is to have more racism.
That's right. The only way to get rid of racism is to
become a racist.
Absolutely that, true, Karen.
Absolutely blows your mind. And this is being done on purpose. And that's what I keep on telling everybody. When you hear people speaking like this, you have to start thinking these people are not Americans. They have no desire to improve America. They have no desire to help you as an American. They are, quote, worldly. They want to be global citizens. And therefore, that's one of the reasons why our borders are open, because they believe that this is the citizen of the world who can live anywhere they want at any given time and any given moment. And the world should be open for everybody. And we should be sharing our value with others that have no value only because they didn't even know that they could have value, but we should give of ours. And it's like we go back to, you were a teacher, I was a teacher. So you have a kid that gets an A and a kid that gets an F, and you say to everybody, good, everybody's going to get a C. It's not fair if some people are smarter than others.
Exactly.
And this is where our society has headed. Everybody must wallow in the sameness of poverty, because in order for this to work, we have to have those that are wealthy telling us what to do, because we're not smart enough to be wealthy.
Going back to something I said a minute ago, it just reminded me, about jobs. You were talking about jobs, and what are you going to do? What are you going to be trained to do now? I have friends from Russia. I've also have friends, actually I have neighbors two doors down who are from Ukraine. I'll tell you an interesting story there. But our friends from Russia, we're having a conversation, and she said, oh, communism wasn't all that bad. You're making a big deal out of it. And I said, really? I mean, you lived under communism. She says, oh, yeah. She said, one of the nice things was everybody had a job. You didn't see people without a job. And her husband jumped in. And this is so how shows how easily we forget. He said, don't you remember if you didn't have a job, you went to jail? And she said, oh, that's right. I forgot about that. She forgot about that. She's been over here probably 12, 15 years, I guess. But she forgot about that. So, my God, how could you possibly forget that if you didn't do what the government told you, you didn't take the job the government said, you would go to jail? And yet we do. This is why it's so important that we keep that light alive ourselves. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. I was just going to ask you, isn't this what is going on in school by data management? Because you're getting a job, but it may not be the job that you want. Maybe you loved animals and you wanted to be a vet, and that's all you could think about is being a vet and helping animals, et cetera, et cetera. And then you go to school and you're answering things on a keyboard, which is being data managed, and you're being nudged into different things. And the keyboard, the algorithm decides, oh no, you're not going to be a vet, you're going to be a mechanic.
Yeah.
You have no choice. We're taking away individual choice. We are actually destroying the destiny of people by imposing a different destiny on someone. We're not allowing them to grow, because when you're in a society, when you can't innovate and you cannot create, you stagnate. You cannot grow. There are no new inventions. There is nothing new. As they said, there's nothing new under the sun. Well, there isn't until you invent it. But we will never see that, because our children are not being taught to be leaders. They're being taught to be followers.
Right. And the elitist children are not learning what my children and your children would be learning under those circumstances. They're going to their own special schools, they're getting their own special. Don't think that they're buying critical race theory one bit. They know exactly what it is.
That's a great point, John. Wow. That is a fabulous point. And at this moment, I got to say something. And that is one of the things that we should do in education is mandate that there will be no devices between K through five. No devices at all. Children should be reading books. They should be paying attention to learning to read, to write, to grasp, to do math, to get their skill set. They don't need devices to do that. And you know who doesn't allow their children? Elite. No devices until they are old enough to handle them, until they have gotten all of their facts, all of their information, until they have formulated, then they can have a device. We need to be doing that in our schools as well.
We do. And we need to, at the home, encourage our kids, stay away from the cell phone, stay away from the computer. You don't need these things. Figure it out in your head. You'll be a lot smarter later on when you do. Well, there's another aspect that I wanted to touch on too. I mentioned, I have a neighbor who's Ukrainian. I posed them about this censorship that we have in America, how we're only limited amount of information that we get, and very often it's coming from the state and all the rest of the stuff. And I said, I want to do something. I want to do something that will help people understand what propaganda is and how to get around that. And he said to me something that was, it floored me when he said it. I asked him, well, how did you teach your children about propaganda? Because you lived in the Ukraine, it was Russian, communist propaganda all over. He said, oh, it was easy. There was nothing to it. I said, well, how did you do it? He said, everybody knew that you couldn't trust anything the government said. You couldn't trust anything the president said. You couldn't trust anything the politician said. And you couldn't trust anything the newspaper said that were mimicking what they did. We all knew this, so nobody believed it. We got our information elsewhere. He says, you people in America, I don't know what is the matter with you. You're supposed to be so savvy. You believe every line of cockamamie BS they throw at you, and you just buy it. And I thought, wow, that was something. So I did a little more digging into this, because everybody doesn't just ignore the government. I think people who listen to your show and a lot of our friends know that exactly what the government's saying isn't worth much. But a lot of people in this world don't, and I have people in my own family who they just don't want to be bothered. So I tried to find out, what is it that makes people susceptible to the narrative, to propaganda. And it's three things. It takes three things for people to buy propaganda. Number one, you have to mentally agree to have somebody else curate your information for you. I'm going to get a source and I'm going to say they're the expert. It might be Fox News. It might be the New York Times, the Washington Post, CNN. But we get somebody to say, oh, they're good. I'm going to trust what they have to say. That's the first thing we do. It's a big mistake. The second thing we do is we agree that if that source tells us not to listen to another source, we comply with that. We don't do it. So if the Washington Post says, oh, you can't listen to the Daily Mail, or you can't listen to Fox News because that's a bunch of right-wing terrorists over there, then you have to comply with that and you don't do it. So that's the second step. And the third step, you have to mentally agree that if you hear an argument that's logical and makes sense, but it counters what the narrative is, you're going to immediately discount it. Now, that may sound illogical, but that's what's taking place in society today. That's what keeps these narratives going. And what enables that narrative to be so effective is censorship. Because through censorship, you don't have to see those other hurtful things. You don't have to watch Fox News. You don't have to listen to John Anthony if he says that, you know what, hydroxychloroquine, I hope you saw my video on that, hydroxychloroquine yes. actually is safe. It actually does save people's lives. So, but we'll just block as has happened. I've had it pulled down, I don't know how many times. So censorship enables the narrative to perpetuate. Because as Willingham said, you don't have enough domain knowledge to make an intelligent decision and critically think. Do you see how this all comes together? All the way back to HUD's AFFH, all these ideas that Barack Obama had, those now are becoming inculcated into our children in school through all the avenues we discussed. And by blocking it through censorship, then they have no opportunity to find anything else. Now, my response to that, I'm going to say this, I'm going to get a little plug in for myself. I'm working on a thing right now, and it's tools to give people, tools that they can have to recognize and teach their children what propaganda is so they can protect themselves from it. And if you know what propaganda is, and I'm guessing virtually everybody in your audience does, there'll be things that are worded in such a way that you can share them with people who don't know without getting them irritated. It's not red meat. It's just good information that people will say, gee, I never looked at it that way before.
One of the things that I say on a continual basis is everything is connected. Yes. Nothing is random. There are no such things as coincidences.
Yep.
Everything has a plan, and all plans are based on lies. So therefore, whatever you hear, believe the opposite.
Right.
And that's usually the truth. Yep. And this is where our society is today. And if you remember, you mentioned Barack Obama. If you remember, one of the things that I found was void in all of his speeches is when he would talk to people, he would always talk about elevating the poverty people into the middle class, but he never talked about elevating the middle class into the upper class. Right. Believe me, folks, they don't want us. They don't want any part of us. They don't want to have anything to do with us. And they would be real happy if they could push the eradicate button and beam us up someplace else, because we are in their way of their prized utopia, which is nothing more than what Portland looks like today. How sad yep. is that?
It is sad. Yeah. You nailed it. Yeah. I believe that this not knowing the truth, the people not being able to decipher what's true and what's false is the biggest thing that holds us back right now as a country. I don't know what Joe Biden is. I hardly talk about Joe Biden. I don't think he's a husk. I don't think he's actually a real person. I think they kind of wheel him around.
Like Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah, exactly.
Weekend at Biden's.
But I've heard his popularity rating is in the 40s. I've heard it's in the 50s. So I don't even know which is true. But the
probably
only reason
nothing.
It's anything above about 5 or 6 is simply because of censorship. People are not allowed to. They don't know that he just wrote another executive order on Friday evening. And that executive order that just came out, by the way, that canceled Trump's executive order that said that we had to stop stereotyping minorities in America. OK, Can you imagine that? He got rid of something and so we want to stop stereotyping. In favor, he put in, we're going to put critical race theory throughout every federal agency in the government. We're going to have watchkeepers to see that it happens. And we're going to have lectures in white supremacy, white privilege, and was it white privilege? What is another privilege in there? And all these different privileges. We're going to actually have classes in there so that people see just how much of an advantage whites have. Oh, white privilege and male privilege. Sorry, I forgot the other one. This is what's being inculcated into the federal agencies, which in turn that is reflected in the regulatory actions that they take and the enforcement at the local level. So it doesn't stay in the federal agency. Just like the AFFH comes right down into your community, this will come right down into your community, all critical race theory.
Yes, this is a plan. This is a program to control every aspect of human activity, and the rewards go to the people who have been promoting it, which is why people like Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates are making billions and billions and billions. And I still do not understand why people use those products. Why are we feeding the beast? Why are we giving them our money? The minute that Facebook and YouTube censored Donald Trump, I got off Facebook and YouTube. There's nothing wrong with talking to people, with actually sending them an email to someone you actually know, instead of being hit by bots of words that are meaningless because they're coming from another computer. So we have to get real with what we're doing. One of the most successful things that happened during the civil rights movement was boycotting. That was their peaceful demonstration. Stop using. And what do we say? Oh, I don't like boycotts. They're not fair. Well, guess what, folks? They are, because they level the playing field. Why are we giving our money to people who hate us? And they tell us over and over again, they hate us. And
look what happened to Coca-Cola when they went woke.
Exactly.
What happened?
Exactly. And that's up to us. We really have the power if we would come together and use it. John, we only have a couple of minutes left, so please give us a big pep as we finish up the show.
Well, I have a lot of confidence, believe it or not. We've talked about a lot of negative things, but the good side is I think the Democrats are gone way too far. And people see it. There's more activism I see right now. And it's around the classroom. Parents and moms and dads are upset about what's taking place. So you want to boycott something? Take your kids out of school for a week. See what happened. If 10% or 12% of those kids didn't show up, that's going to hit the Title I funds. And you watch how fast some of this stuff stops. And the other thing is keep an eye on what your children are doing. I hope you'll send me a message. If you would like to learn more about the tools, I'm going to put a little plug in. There's no fee for these or anything, but I really want to get these tools in front of people that you can share with others. So my website or my email is john@sustainablefreedomlab.org. Send me a message. If you'd like to be included in any of those tools that I release, I'll be more than happy to send them out to you.
Well,
and
I want to
thank you for having me on so I can share my ideas too.
Absolutely. And I want to thank you, John. And I just want to add one more thing. Folks, you've got to go to your community meetings and make sure that zoning is not changed in your community without your knowledge, because that's one of the ways that they are getting rid of single family housing. So we have a lot of things that we have to pay attention to, and that's why we have wonderful people like John who are out there. And as John said, this is for sharing. The idea is not to make money. The idea is to save our country. That's more important right now than anything else, is to recognize that we have evil people who are very much committed to the destruction of America, and we cannot allow that to happen. It's up to us. The only people that can fight this is we, the people. And it looks like, as John said, we are moving in the right direction. And by right direction, I mean we are going to take back and save our country, but we cannot allow these same, quote, experts to be our dictators. We have to be aware, we have to pay attention, and we have to come back next week and listen to another show. This is Karen Schoen, and you have been listening to The Prism of America's Education with my guest, John Anthony, who can be found at the SustainableFreedomLab.org. Thank you, John. Wonderful. But